Welcome back, Dan Bickley, Mike Jarecki. The NFL draft next week, and a special ex-Cardinal will be part of the festivities. Larry Centers will announce their second-round draft pick next Friday. He joins us now. Hello, Larry. How are you?
What's going on, guys?
All right, is this kind of cool to be involved with the Cardinals' draft proceedings?
It is. It's extra cool for me. You know, I've kind of taken a lot of time and gotten away from the game, and nowadays, you know, to be involved and to have people recognize what I was able to do some years ago, man, it seems. Really extra special.
Right. You know, when you left the Cardinals, there were a lot of people who were angry that they didn't pay you and they didn't pay Lomas and they didn't pay Jameer and they let a really good thing get away. How long did it take you to kind of get over that and kind of get cool with the Cardinals again?
You know what? I don't think I've ever really lost respect or anything like that. You know, getting cool with them, I think it took me to stop playing the game, because obviously I was playing within the same district within the same conference.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, so they were looked at as an enemy whenever we had to face them. But I harbor no ill will toward the Cardinals. I know it's a business, and it's the way that things go in the National Football League, and they have to look out for their bottom line more importantly than they have to look out for each individual player. But I definitely appreciate the fans voicing their opinion that they wanted me to stick around. That gave me a big boost to do what I was able to do eventually.
Hey, Lair, I mean, you guys, you know, you beat the Dallas Cowboys, and as Dan pointed out, you know, they kind of gut the team. But, I mean, it was just you guys had something going there. A lot of people thought you were close. And then really, you know, I don't know if it was so much money, but also it was the leadership out of the locker room between you and Lomas and Jameer. I mean, it was at the time, it was just surprising that they would do that.
Yeah, it's you know, as everybody knows, it is very difficult to win in the National Football League, and it's almost impossible if you don't have everything working in the right direction. And it seemed back then that we tended to be moving in the correct direction of winning, and you know, won a playoff game for the first time in I don't know how many years. And you know, it was surprising to see them shake things up, but again, I think what most people have to understand that the bottom line is, it is a business, and if it's not working economically for a team, then you know that's probably just as important as winning from time to time.
Right, and you know, after that Cowboys win, of course you ran into a buzzsaw in Minnesota, but the thing was, even the Dallas Morning News, which you know you grew up in Texas and played with Stephen F. Austin, the next day it was like the new NFC East, the Phoenix Cardinals. I mean, people thought you guys, that was your time to turn it around.
It was definitely our time. You know, we had gone through the trials.
Yep.
And you know, passed most of the tests, and we weathered the storm. Finally, felt like we got over the hump. And then we had the team dismantled. You know, who knows? You know, you never know what the powers that be are looking at when they're making those executive decisions. So as a player, all you can do is respect it, go out and put on the uniform that you issued, play the best ball you can play, and hope for the best, hope that your team wins.
Larry Centers, our guest right here on Extra Sports 910. But, Larry, let's go back to those Sun Devil Stadium days. I mean, just, you know, the fact that you were just a huge fan favorite. I mean, the one year you caught 101 balls, you were a great guy when it came to chipping the defensive ends coming off that. What do you remember from Sun Devil Stadium?
I just remember, most specifically, I remember the South End Zone and their fervor and their enthusiasm that they brought to the field every week, regardless of what record we had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be late in the season, and those guys were still cheering. And I've often said, you can go back in the archives and look at my interviews, I've said that Cardinals fans are some of the best in the league because they cheered when things weren't going great. It's easy to be a fan when your team is winning, when your team is knocking down playoff wins. But how hard is it when you get disappointed and you have to get back up? I mean, we had some tough fans out in Arizona, and it just really filled my heart up to see the team go to the Super Bowl a few years back and face the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Now, yeah, Mike's right. When you played, you were a great fan favorite because you played with such toughness and such resilience and such drive. That it was hard not to cheer for you. What do you think your legacy as a Phoenix Cardinal is, Larry?
I hope now and I hope back then that, you know, that the fans understood that I was going to give them everything that I had, mainly my teammates. You know, I think that was who I felt most accountable to first, and then the people who are paying the tickets, paying the ticket prices to get up in the stands and watch an entertaining show. They don't come to see, if they want to go to a college game, they could do that. But as a professional, it's my job to go out and do the best that I can do with each and every opportunity that I was given. And I hope that my fans can look back at my career and say that.
Now, being associated with the Cardinals draft this year, it's kind of interesting because when you came out of Stephen F. Austin, you were a fifth-round pick, I believe 115th overall, so not a lot of people believing in you back then. Were you one of the classic cases of guys who come into the league with the chip on their shoulder because no one is quite able to see what you brought to the field or brought to the field at that time?
At that time, you know, I think all bets are off. When you don't get picked in the first two or three rounds, then I think it's easy to be overlooked. I mean, I don't think that it's shameful that someone overlooks you, because obviously the people who are paid to pick those selections didn't see what they needed to see to pick you in a higher round. So I don't fault anybody for not recognizing my talents early. And also I think that, you know, through the grace of God, I was able to develop and stay healthy and develop the skills that I eventually developed to become the player that we needed at the time. And I'm thankful about that.
All right, Larry, one of my favorite moments of you when you were playing for the Cardinals had to be, I think it was a Monday night game against the Cowboys. And correct me if I'm wrong, when you actually leapfrogged Larry Brown. Is that correct?
That is. That is correct. That was a Christmas night game, Monday
yep.
night. And, you know, now I see guys doing it all the time. But back then, you didn't see that very often, and I was able to pull it off.
Yeah, you were able to pull it off. You leaped him. All right, let's talk about the fullback position. You know, even though you were a guy that can definitely block, and I want to get into that chipping in a moment here, but let's talk about the fullback position in the NFL now. Now with this, you know, the team throwing the ball and the read option, we just don't see that position as much as we used to.
We don't. I mean, you know, it's an evolving league, and I think once defenses figure out what offensive teams are trying to accomplish and their success for doing, I think everybody changes their game plan, and it forces the offense to change. The fullback is a position that's basically faded away at this particular time. There still are a few teams who utilize a fullback in their systems. I think that... I don't know. I think it's always good to be able to have a fullback in a system
mm-hmm.
to throw a defense off balance, to make them accountable to who they're responsible to cover and to be responsible for in any given offense.
Now let's talk about chipping, because you were one of the best at it, and you would just sit there and you'd kind of bait them a little bit, and then all of a sudden you'd take off. And I'm talking about guys like Charles Haley when you guys were playing in the NFC East. Was there an art to that, or was it more just a timing thing? You had to get the right shoulder.
Well, I started doing that in college, and it
okay.
worked for me. And what I recognize in the pros is that the defensive ends, as they were rushing, were really not paying attention to anything but the guy, the tackle. We played on the road a lot. We had some tackles who weren't some of the best in the league. So I felt that the more you can do, the more valuable you are to your team. So I started trying to help those guys out, maybe even try to chip a defensive end early as he was on his rush.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point forward during the ball game, you can just show some body presence, and it might cause him to hesitate, giving my guy an advantage at that time.
I mean, you would literally de-cleat guys. All right, let's talk about when you went to the Washington Redskins. I remember when you signed there, and I spoke to you, and I actually met you at the airport when you returned, and you were just excited. And it's really no disrespect towards the Cardinals organization, but you got a chance to go to a place where they, I mean, you didn't have the fans half, you know, full. I mean, it was packed. I mean, everyone loved the Redskins. What was it like when you signed there?
It was good. It was a really good experience. When I went there, what I was probably most amazed with was that every game was on national, it was televised mm-hmm. locally. You know, when we were at the Cardinals, we would have a multitude of games that were blacked out. So basically, our fans got to see about half of what we
That's right.
were able to do as professionals. But out there, they got to see the full 16 games because they were televised. And you had fans that were traditionally connected. They had grown up. You know, I always say, you know, that winning is a tradition and also losing is a tradition.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you you win, and the Redskins have been winning, you know, when they've won, then they have, like, waiting periods for season tickets. And, you know, there's just so much more excitement surrounding a team that wins. Everybody wants to be a part of a winner.
Now, you played a long time. You played 14 years. You played on some bad fields. How are you doing physically? We know during the concussion era, a lot of guys started to wear the scars and the bruises from their NFL career. How are you doing, Larry?
I mean, I feel like I'm doing okay. You know, it's a day-to-day thing. Some days are better than others. You know, I think that I'm 44 now. I think I'm probably not as good physical shape as the average 44-year-old who never played professional football. But, you know, it's something that you deal with. And I'm not a crybaby. I try to overcome. It's just another challenge.
There you
go. And try to wake up with a smile on my face every day and go forward and be productive. And that's how I look at things.
That's a good attitude. All right, now, given your role now with the Cardinals and their second-round draft pick, have you had a study up on guys so you got the pronunciation right? What happens if they hand you a guy who's got some big, funky last name? What are you going to do then, Larry?
Hey, man, we're gonna work it out. I don't know if this is something I can game plan for. You know, I gotta narrow it down to a few guys and just hope that I get the pronunciation correct. But I'm not sweating this thing at all. I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna try to represent the Cardinals in the most positive light that I can possibly represent them in, and do what I'm asked to do, and you know, just catch up with some old friends. That's what my goal is for next week.
Hey, Larry, I mean, they could draft a lineman. Hopefully, maybe they'll draft that in the first round. They can get a safety in the second round, and Eric Reed from LSU. Maybe they'll go pass rusher, so you're going to be fine. All right, before I let you go, and I always appreciate your time, great catching up with you. Ring of Honor, your thoughts of ever appearing in the Ring of Honor in Glendale at the Cardinals' new stadium?
Well, let me be specific and emphatic in saying this. There is no doubt in my mind that I belong, that I have a place in the Ring of Honor. If the people do the right thing, the people who choose, who goes there, if they do the right thing. I don't know what the delay is. I don't know what, you know, if I've rubbed somebody the wrong way or whatever. But I know through my effort, through what I was able to do for my team as an Arizona Cardinal, that I feel in my heart of hearts that I deserve for my name to be lifted into the Ring of Honor.
No doubt about that.
But hey, I'm going to have a positive attitude regardless of whether my name ever gets there or if it never goes there, you know. The work has been done. When they go back and look at the tape, I challenge them to find Larry Sinners taking a lazy step as we were trying to win a football game throughout my entire career as an Arizona Cardinal.
Larry, I may be biased. I covered you. You were one of the most, likable players. The fans loved you. They were chanting your name in the stands.
And Larry,
absolutely. And I think the numbers reflected. I mean, it's not like you had 500 catches. I mean, you had close to 900 catches in your career. The one year you had 101 catches as a fullback.
Yeah, you know, that is something that is more amazing to me the longer I stay out of the game.
Right.
But I think that what I want people to know about me is that I wasn't only concerned about stats. You know, you talked earlier about me chipping guys to help my offensive tackles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about blocking, you talk about pass protecting. You talk about things that never show up in the stat sheet. I feel like I did those things with the same amount, if not more, enthusiasm that I did the things that showed up in the stat sheet.
No doubt about it. What a credit to the organization you've been. Have fun with it next Friday. Look forward to seeing you up in that Ring of Honor before too long, Larry.
All right, guys. guys. Thanks for your time. I appreciate you having me on.
All the best.
Our pleasure. Take care, Larry.
Larry Centers, former Cardinal fullback, you know, making all those catches in a year, 101. What the hell was wrong with those wide receivers that year? Were they not getting open?
Well, you know what? We always kind of make fun of them not being able to run the screen. He was just part of the game plan. A lot of times, Dan, he would chip, and then he would go out to the flat, and they would just throw the ball to him. He was a safety valve for the quarterback.
Right.
And he had hands like Velcro. He wouldn't drop anything. And you're right. They were chanting his name at the stadium. Listen, I couldn't believe it when they cut him. I mean, I remember Steve Schoenfeld called me and told me that they just released Larry Centers, and I'm like, oh, that was really the first time I thought, okay, it really is a business.
Yeah.
You know, Lomas was getting up there. Jameer wasn't making as many plays, but it was still the veteran presence that they had in that locker room. You cut away Lomas Brown, okay, and he was one of Vince Tobin's first signings. He brought him in from Detroit, 3 years, $9 million, starting left tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Lomas Brown was a good tackle with Barry Sanders with the Detroit Lions. Then they cut Jameer, and then they cut the heart from the team. And that was Larry Sanders.
I totally agree. And now that was back before Michael Bidwill. That was when the old man was running the team. And there were a lot of people who saw that, and they're like, oh, my God. How do you finally have a winning team and then not pay to keep it together? And that led to an era of darkness for the Cardinals, where people didn't believe in the organization at all. And Dave McGinnis got stuck with that team. Jake Plummer got caught up in the middle of it. It really opened the doors to an era of darkness that the Cardinals didn't get out of until Ken Wisenhunt got here.
Well said. No, I mean, Dan, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, 2 years later, you know, they're telling Jake, we want you to come back. You're going to compete for the job. They lowballed him. He has to go to Denver. He goes to Chicago. He's sitting in Chicago in March in free agency, okay? He's sitting in his hotel room. And he calls McGinnis and says, hey, I'm not coming back to the Cardinals. I'm going to sign with the Broncos. And then the Cardinals go out and sign Jeff Blake.
Blake time, man. Remember that? It's Blake time. It's not Jake time. It's Blake time.
Well, the fact is, it was one of those, it was kind of like what you mentioned yesterday with Lindsey Hunter. It was one of those, we're going to make you an offer, but we know you're probably not going to like it.
Yeah.
But if you don't have anything else, you can always come back here and compete.
Right.
And he had two offers. He had the Bears and he had the Broncos.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally was sitting in Chicago looking out his window, and it was snowing, and he's like, I have to make a decision.
Well, I wonder if he looks now, okay, I went to Denver where they had one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time that I had to follow, or I could have gone to Chicago where they've never really had a great quarterback. So, you know, given—
Well, knowing we— what,
Hey, Sid Luckman was good.
Knowing his relationship with Shanahan—
Yeah.
He probably would have went to Chicago knowing what he knows now.
Right. That's my whole point. It's— I wonder if he looks back and goes, man, if I would have only gone to the Bears.
Bears.
And he was successful in Denver. But Shanahan wanted to replace him when they drafted Cutler.
He's Mike Jarecki. I'm Dan Bickley. We're back right after this.